The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
In thinking about what to talk about tonight, my mind is still lingering with this topic that I taught yesterday morning, Sunday morning. So I'd like to take that topic again. I don't know if any of you were here yesterday, but... And the topic is gratitude. And it's a topic which many religions have emphasized the value of. Different religions have different teachings on gratitude, partly out of the foundation of, you know, their theology or their view of the world. And Buddhism also has some emphasis on gratitude. It doesn't get a lot of press in Buddhism, but it's certainly there. And it's considered a beautiful quality of the heart, a beautiful, beautiful positive approach of the mind, attitude. And I was kind of touched many years ago when I read the myth of the Buddha's enlightenment. And the way the myth, you know, was kind of developed over time was... The Buddha had his enlightenment one night, and in the next 7 days, he continued sitting there under the Bodhi tree, enjoying the bliss of his enlightenment. So that's a nice thing. And then the next 7 days, he got up and he took a few steps, walked kind of away from that tree, and then he sat stood for 7 days. Looking at the tree with an attitude of generosity, being generous for this tree that sheltered him for his enlightenment, during his quest for it. And, you know, I take it as a myth, and so I take it as being symbolic, representative of something. And, you know, it's probably idiosyncratic interpretation on my part, but the idea that, the Buddha turns around and expresses or feels this attitude of gratitude towards nature, to the place in nature where he sat. The place in nature, he sat on the ground under a tree. And so for some reason he expressed his gratitude. And I don't want to compare myself to the Buddha, but one of the great delights for me in learning meditation is at some point in my meditation, at the end of my meditation, I started to feel grateful. That there was something had happened in the process of meditating, that at the end of the meditation, when I'm ready to kind of end the meditation and come out and open my eyes, I feel certainly deep appreciation, but I feel a deep gratitude. And the people have asked me, when I told them that, grateful for what? And I could probably give something I'm grateful for. I can probably come up with a reason. But what is most remarkable for me is the gratitude doesn't have a what to it. It's just, I would say that the kind of the heart, how it feels in my heart or my mind, it's just grateful. And there's not a reason for the gratitude. There's not there's no purpose for the gratitude. It just is, kind of just there. And, for someone who's as rational as I am, that's kind of a weird thing, just have a gratitude for no reason. But how I understand it is that, at least how I've tracked my own mind, I don't know if it's true for you all, that when I am really busy, either doing things, or more likely busy with my little mind, thinking about things, preoccupied, concerned with my daily life and things and whatever it might be. There's, in that space of preoccupation, there's not a lot of room for some of the more beautiful qualities of the mind, of the heart. That if I'm really caught up in, the holidays, getting in all those holiday cards written and sent off, concerned I'm not going to get them, out fast enough or something, that, I might feel a little bit stressed even, and in that stress, there's not much space or time. Who has time for gratitude when you're, sending happy wishes to everyone? Well, you fill in, you know, it's just a silly example, but if you fill in, I mean, if you're stressed and concerned and, you know, running around like crazy and have a lot of desires or have a lot of aversions and complaints, there's not much space in the mind for gratitude to arise. But so what happens in meditation is that if you're lucky enough, the mind quiets down and mind is not preoccupied, caught up in concerns so much. And maybe the thinking quiets down some. And the heart and the feelings and the tension in the body begins to relax and soften. And there can be a feeling of calm or contentment or a beautiful feeling, a just sense of being delighted for just being present, being alive. And there's no, you know, just the delight of just being as opposed to the delight of having and getting or protecting or running away or hiding or, you know, all these things that people do. There's no doing is needed, it's just being. And that high quality being certainly requires that the stressed mind, the busy mind, the wanting mind, the aversive mind is quieted down some. And so when there's that kind of quiet in the mind, contentment in the mind, then it seems that that makes space for other feelings to arise. And I think of some of these other feelings or attitudes that can arise as being relatively shy, for most of us, most of the time, meaning that for most of us, because of these positive feelings that can be there are not really well developed, they tend to be overlooked, they tend to be covered over, ignored, you know, much of the time. So, you know, feelings of joy, feelings of love, feelings of kindness, of generosity, and also feelings of gratitude. Belong to this category of shy states of mind or shy attitudes. But they're there and available if we quiet down, calm down enough or get settled enough. And so this idea of being grateful for no good reason at all, isn't that great that we have this capacity? I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of revolutionary, isn't it? Especially when you appreciate how beneficial it is to be grateful. What a beautiful thing it does. And so I wanted to read something about, you know, there's one of the great things about the modern era, last, you know, is that all the clinical research that gets done on our psychology. And some of it, you know, in the last 20 years or so, has been this whole movement of positive psychology to look at, you know, to kind of compensate for all the, you know, studies in pathology that psychology did for 100 years. And they realized that they left out half the, you know, half the human mind, you know. And so now they're kind of looking more focused on the positive qualities of the mind that we can have and what does it take to develop and what are the conditions for them and how beneficial are they? What goes on? How do they work? And so one of the themes, one of the topics is gratitude. Isn't that great to be, wouldn't it be great to be a researcher whose job was to do clinical studies in gratitude? And so they have a whole body now of literature. And here's a little summary of the research. A large body of recent work has suggested that people who are more grateful have higher levels of well-being. Grateful people are happier, less depressed, less stressed, and more satisfied with their lives and social relationships. Grateful people also have higher levels of control of their environments, personal growth, purpose in life, and self-acceptance. Grateful people have more positive ways of coping with the difficulties they experience in life, being more likely to seek support from other people. Reinterpreted and grow from the experience, and spend more time planning how to deal with a problem. Grateful people have less negative coping strategies, being less likely to try to avoid the problem. Deny there is a problem, blame others, blame themselves, or cope through substance use. Grateful people sleep better, and this seems to be because they think less negative and more positive thoughts just before going to sleep. Whilst many emotions and personality traits are important to well-being, there is evidence that gratitude may be uniquely important. First, a longitudinal study showed that people who were more grateful coped better with a life transition. Specifically, people who were more grateful before the transition were less stressed, less depressed, and more satisfied with their relationships 3 months later. Second, two recent studies have suggested that gratitude may have a unique relationship with well-being and can explain aspects of well-being that other personality traits cannot. Many years ago, a friend of mine who's kind of a therapist and a Buddhist teacher said he was a little concerned about some of his long-time therapy clients because after years of practice, they still weren't grateful. That was an interesting, you know, approach to therapy, I thought. So, you know, if this the kind of studies are even, you know, partially accurate or true, it speaks something really well about the benefits of being grateful. And so, therefore, you're supposed to be grateful. You better be grateful. All these people have worked hard for you. You should. And that's one of the problems with gratitude is sometimes we get this message, you know, of obligation. You're obligated to be grateful. In fact, in some cultures, the gratitude and a sense of obligation are closely wedded. And though I think luckily from, you know, generic kind of Western culture ideas that gratitude and obligation are two different things. And I think that's quite important, that there's no obligation. You don't have to kind of, you know, grit your teeth and try to squeeze gratitude out of yourself. But there are ways of cultivating gratitude, developing gratitude, and I would suggest that it's a good thing to do. It's a useful thing to do, and it doesn't have to be artificial to do it. So one of the ways of cultivating gratitude is to do less, is to relax deeply, you know, this meditation thing. Maybe you also, if you learn how to relax well in meditation, you also will come out of meditation and be much more inclined to feel, be grateful. Come out and look. I mean, I've come out of meditation and walked out and looked at the sky and the clouds or the trees and the grass or the cars or the asphalt. And I'm just so content that it just seems so special and wonderful. Everything is special. Just being is special. And in that sense of specialness, it's easier to feel grateful. Now, this is maybe far-fetched for people who, you know, some people don't have access to these kinds of feelings at all. So are there ways, if you don't have access to these feelings, ways of cultivating them more actively? And it seems that people, researchers and people who are studying gratitude and how to develop gratitude, the number one technique for developing more gratitude is to keep a gratitude journal. And every day, at the end of the day, write down 3 to 5 things that you're grateful for that day. And initially, it might be really hard, pulling nails. What could I possibly be grateful for? But then you think about it, after a while, you know, there's a lot, there's probably an infinite amount of things you could be grateful for. So one of the things, I don't know if this is an accurate representation of how things are in the world, but it's an observation I've made, is that cultures that have some relative degree of affluence have a lower degree of gratitude than cultures who have a low degree of affluence. There seems to be higher gratitude. There's perhaps because when there's less affluence, there's less expectation that anything was going to go right or work, and so when something does work, simple things, you're grateful. So that one of the examples, like I gave yesterday, is, you know, I've lived in different countries in the world, and I've watched how long it takes to get the telephone installed when you move into a new place. And the attitude that I have sometimes when the telephone comes being installed. And so, you know, here, you call up a telephone company, they say, oh, the repair person is going to be there between 8 and 12. Now, if they don't come between 8 and 12, I mean, you know, and you kind of expect, you deserve it, you know, it's expected, and, you know, and when they come and do it, I mean, that's just, it's their job, and this is the way things are supposed to be, and you have your right to have a telephone. There are places where I've lived where it might take several weeks to get the telephone installed, and there's no clarity about when it's going to come, and there's, you know, it's like you're just grateful that it came. And wow, thank you so much, this is great. And so I don't know if this is, you know, anybody's done statistics about the relationship between gratitude and affluence, but I suspect that more often than not, there's a strong correlation with that. You know, we live in a culture, here, and we're pretty affluent compared to much of the world here, and we also live in a culture which is society, which is more interdependent than almost anywhere else in terms of the social interdependence. There's our how we get through our day and the things that we use and our life depends on is you know so thoroughly, completely dependent on other people doing things for us. Because we don't, most of us don't grow our own food. We don't go, you know, pull the water out of the well by ourselves. Most of us don't walk to work. There's just, you know, we don't do a lot of the basic things for ourselves. We have to, you know, we go to the, someone else grows our food, someone else has to bring it to the store, someone else has to shelve it in the stores, someone else, you know, so we do all this, all these people are doing this, and someone else is responsible for the water, you know, and who's responsible for your poop? You know, are you grateful for those people who make it all work so well? Or, you could go out there and dig a hole in your backyard. Or you get around, you know, the fact that there's asphalt on the streets, you know, is there gratitude make that it's there? Or are you just upset by the potholes? So I don't know if this kind of analysis makes sense for you, but the idea that we live in a world that's socially extremely interdependent, and with that sense of interdependence sometimes comes a sense of it should be this way, and I have a right for it this way. And so, you know, we have, you know, I think some of the highest incidence of depression and anxiety anywhere in the world in this affluent society. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the affluent, that depression and anxiety comes with this kind of huge interdependent kind of world where there's expectations and demands and all kinds of things that comes with this. But I don't think it takes a lot of reflection to consider how much we benefit from the work of others and other things, and then to feel grateful for it. So this is a long-winded way of talking about making this list of 3 to 5 things you're grateful for every day. And then stretching yourself and beginning to reflect, you know, what am I really grateful for? What have I been grateful for today? And slowly to kind of develop a stronger and stronger sense of tuning in to those things that you've benefited from the day, those things you've appreciated. And that seems to be the number one approach to cultivating more gratitude. You don't have to feel more grateful. You don't have to make yourself more grateful. You review the day to find what you could be grateful for. So they've done these clinical studies where they've taken a group of people, and they've one group of people keeps this gratitude journal. Another group of people just writes a journal of all the five significant things from the day. Just, there's no, researchers say nothing about, you know, positive significant or negatively significant, just significant. And then another group of people keep a complaint journal. And then they do this for 8 weeks every day. So what do you think the results are? You know, the results are pretty dramatic, that the well-being of the people who did the gratitude journal were just dramatically better than the people who kept the complaint journal. They also had a control group who did nothing, just kind of went about their life. And the gratitude people did dramatically better than them. And so this goes along with one of the principles of the teachings the Buddha gave, which is not maybe unique to him, but I like his little pithy way he said it. Whatever you think about regularly becomes the inclination of your mind. You know, whatever you think about regularly becomes a habit of mind. And so if you are regularly complaining, you might have really good things to complain about. And you might be completely justified in complaining about what you complain about. But guess what you're reinforcing? What is the inclination, the habit of mind? And complaining, you know, in spite of all the good reasons you have for complaining and all the reasons you're justified to complain, it's kind of a downer. You know, I think it's just kind of, you know, it's not really conducive to welfare for you. And so what about, rather than doing I don't think any of you have the complaint journal at home, but some of you probably, you know, have a tendency to complain once in a while, occasionally, almost. And so, you know, what about just trying to tip the balance? Maybe even continue complaining as you do, but just keep track of how many complaints you have. And then make sure to keep tally and always have at least one more thing you're grateful for every day than the number of things you have complaining you complain about. You make up for it, you know. Balance it out and make sure you have slightly more. Look at what your mind does regularly. And this is one of the great values of mindfulness practice. It isn't just simply to be present, but mindfulness practice is also to be present so you can track what actually goes on for you in the present moment. And one of the things to notice is what your mind regularly does. What's the top 5 tunes in your mind every day over your lifetime? What do you tend to do with your mind? Is it mostly planning? Is it mostly complaining? Is it mostly fear-based thoughts that you have? Is it mostly gratitude? Is it mostly generosity? What goes on in your mind on a regular basis? And because if you can track it and start getting a sense of the basic trends of what your mind is involved in, then you can start questioning that and looking, is this really how you want to spend your time? The fact that your mind does it doesn't mean that it's natural. Or to say it differently, perhaps, the fact that your mind does something doesn't mean that it has to be that way. And so what are the healthy ways to change your mind? What's the healthy ways of turning the ocean liner so it goes, you know, slowly begins going a different direction? And I would like to suggest that gratitude is one of those things, is to spend time, you know, make it a kind of somewhat of a habit to consider what you're grateful for and consider the people you're thankful for and then to express that thanks. There's something very important about expressing gratitude that kind of makes it come a flower more, makes it, it's like acknowledge, something that gets more fully acknowledged grows or flowers or becomes you know, more real or developed in us. And I saw this idea when I was at the Zen monastery, where every day we had to do many, many times a day, we had to bow. There's all this bowing. And for me, after in the monastery, because all the meditation, bowing for me became an expression of appreciation and in gratitude. And because I had a lot there in the monastery. But we had to bow, not just like, you know, all kinds of situations. The saying in the monastery was, if in doubt, bow. And so, but one of the kind of rules in the monastery was that, or customs was, if you pass someone, you know, pass someone by walking opposite directions, you'd always stop and bow to that person. And sometimes it was quite lovely to do, but also there were plenty of times when people would see someone coming a distance and kind of take a long way around. Because, you know, so you're always stopping and bowing. But there's something beautiful. So this is what I'm telling you, we did it over and over and over again, the feelings that I had inside that were evoked by that bowing, it's kind of a softening, a little bit of humility, a little bit of softening, appreciation, gratitude, kind of a good feeling, you know, kind of a peaceful way of being with someone, got reinforced countless times every day, and countless times over the 3 years that I was there, and so. By the repetition of it, it gave strength and developed these kinds of qualities in me that came from that bowing. I got a little bit attached to it habituated to it, because after 3 years of living in the monastery down here at Tassajara, I left, and the first day I was gone, I was walking down College Avenue in Berkeley. And there were a lot more people walking on the sidewalks on College Avenue than anywhere in the monastery. And the strong habit was I wanted to bow to them all. But, you know, it wasn't appropriate to bow to people, you know, walking down College Avenue. People would have thought I was strange, you know, and would have made them uncomfortable or something. But then, luckily for me, coincidentally, across the street, half a block away, was a woman who'd been to Tassajara that summer, you know, knew had been there for a few weeks. And so I ran after her. Run after that woman, right? Chase that woman. And I said, stop, stop. And so I said, I really need to bow to someone. That's like a maybe silly story, but you know, it's true. You know, I felt had this beautiful feeling that wanted to come out. So this is a long way of saying it's really good to give expression to the beautiful feelings we have. And to give expression to thanks is a beautiful thing to do. And so occasionally say thanks to the people who support you and help you or that you appreciate. Say thanks to the people who, even do small things for you, strangers even who help you out. Say thanks to the trees. Say thanks to your house. A beautiful moment for me. I have no idea what was going on. To me, maybe it was all my projection on this story, but this event was very meaningful for me. So I was sitting a retreat at the Zen Center many years ago, and a 7-day retreat, silent meditation retreat. And the custom there is that in the middle of the afternoon, they serve tea in the meditation hall. Everyone's sitting there in meditation posture, and very formal. And the people come in with trays, and they serve a little cookie, and they come with a teapot, and they... And during the first day of the retreat, they come with a tray that has a teacup, little beautiful little round teacup. And then you keep that teacup next to your place for 7 days. So rather than bringing your clean cup every time, you use your own cup, and they just come with tea, a pot of tea, and they pour tea for you in the afternoon, for your afternoon little, tea. And so I was sitting next to a visiting Japanese Zen monk who'd come from Japan, and I don't know why he was there, but he was sitting the retreat. And he was very, he was into it, he was much more proper than the rest of us, and knew the forms and the Zen, and he was a kind of impressive man, and I enjoyed sitting near him, watching him. He was very present, very attentive, very mindful all the time. It was beautiful. And then the 7th day, the last day, they serve the tea, and when you finish drinking your tea, because it's the last day, they come with trays to collect the teacups because you don't need them anymore. First day you receive them, the last day you take them away. And there's all these, in Zen, it's very choreographed. So like what you do in the meditation hall is all pre-choreographed. So you when you're supposed to bow in the meditation hall, when you stand, when you sit down, how you put your hands, what you do, is all choreographed. So it's not, it's not a lot of choices. So I knew the ritual, how it's all done. And he varied the choreographed ritual at a certain moment. And how he varied it made a big impact on me. And what it was he had the teacup in front of him, and when they came to take the teacup away, he bowed to the teacup. And he bowed to the, and so I have no idea what was going on. Maybe he was sleepy and didn't notice, but I don't know what he was doing. But for me, how I interpreted it was that he was even appreciating an inanimate object. There was some kind of appreciation there. And I've known people, I've been in little debates with some Buddhist teachers about, is it appropriate to be thankful for inanimate objects? Because they're not doing anything for you, is the argument. But I think, I don't care if it's appropriate or not. The rationale of whether it's appropriate or not to thank an inanimate object is secondary to what happens in the heart. And the heart can feel grateful. And that's good enough for me. Doesn't matter, the reason. So that's been one of the great delights of my life. I have many delights, but one of the, maybe that's too loud to say one of the great, but it's a wonderful delight of my life is to experience gratitude for no good reason. Just have it well up. And I attribute that to my meditation practice, that I've had that experience, and it happens not only in meditation, but then from here, it can spill out from here, and it's something that I, if I'm a little bit lucky as I go about my day and don't get too caught up in what I'm doing, that it's really close by. And I'm just kind of, I walk around sometimes quite amazed and very appreciative and just grateful, sometimes grateful to breathe, grateful for, just life, just to be alive. Grateful that so much is working. One of the last things I'll say is, many years ago, I reflected about all the things that were needed for me to my whole psychophysical, you know, and the world, everything in the world, had to work in order for me to, you know, live more or less somewhat comfortably. You know, the whole psychophysical, you know, your own being, you know, all the chemistry in your body and the hormones and the electrons and the nervous system. And I mean, it's a phenomenally complex. You know, I read recently that there are something like 100 billion nerves in the brain.
Neurons.
And how many times can they connect to each other? How many connections do they make? It's something like a million trillion or a trillion billion, you know, good connections. And it's one of the most complex things that people know in the universe. The telecommunication system in the world is a lot simpler than your brain. You know, the telecommunication system is pretty complicated. And there's supposed to be 100 billion, so 100 billion neurons, and there's 200 billion stars in the Milky Way. So that's more. So it's a phenomenal number. So anyway, so the point being, just in our own body, the amount of stuff that has to work right to us to live and go along is huge. So I like to say 99.999999999% at least of what it takes for us to live well has nothing to do with us or our choice in our running the show. And the 0.00000000001% that we're responsible for, we get completely worked up about. So then I'll end this evening expressing my gratitude for all of you. I regularly feel quite grateful for the opportunity to come together and meditate with other people, to practice with other people. It's a beautiful thing to do that. I certainly don't take it for granted that there's people to meditate with. I find it supportive for my meditation and my practice, even though I'm supposed to be the teacher up here, and you know, I don't know what I'm supposed to be, a role model or something. But you know, I'm here to practice as well, and so to be together with other people who we share the practice is a beautiful thing and very meaningful for me, and I'm very grateful for all of you. I'm grateful for the sincerity, the dedication, the interest, the fact that you're interested, sit still and be quiet like this. There's a lot of other things you can be doing. And so I want to express my thanks. Thank you. Thank you very much. And those who came tonight and those who have been coming for a long time, it's a beautiful thing. There's many people here who volunteer and to make this place work. And maybe at the end of the year, it's maybe nice to express the gratitude I feel for the many people. I came today to IMC, like I often do in the morning, and you know, nothing, Monday morning, nothing happens here. Usually I come here and I'm by myself. And I came here and there were people here. And there was one person, Steve Johnson, who volunteers to take care of the building. He was here to receive the Roto-Rooter man who comes every year to clean out the redwood tree roots from the septic line, sewage line. It has to happen otherwise. And that was nice, you know, well, how nice. He's here on this Monday to do that. And then I came here and there were, I didn't know, that I know happens once a year that we do this, you know, so I kind of wasn't a complete surprise. But then, I had no idea this was in the works or what was happening or nothing, but there were people here completely turning the kitchen upside down, cleaning it. And I don't know, how did that happen? Where did they come from? it was not, as far as I knew, it wasn't planned or, you know, just there they were. I didn't know anything about it. And I felt so delighted to come in and see that people had taken the initiative to give the kitchen a solstice clean. So thank you for that. And so many of you here, have volunteered. And I think it's one of the very nice things, very wonderful things about IMC, is that it's all run by volunteers, and it's the people who practice here who take care of the place, so that other people can come and have a place to come and practice. This place doesn't have to be here. There's no obligation for anything like this to be here. And it's kind of a remarkable thing that people come together. So many people have come together with a similar vision and interest to support and make something like this happen. And many people come to me. You know, so we have, maybe some of you are here. Maybe this is not a nice thing to say, but sometimes I go home to my wife and say, there was another Audio Dharma tourist today. Maybe that's it, and I apologize for any of you if you're in that category. that's what I say. But all these wonderful people, you know, who've been listening to the Audio Dharma, the talks, they from all over the country or the world, and somehow they're coming through. Yeah, like you, you're an Audio Dharma tourist. Yeah. I hope you don't mind. And so, you know, they've been listening for a long time, or you know, and so they're somehow, you know, coming through San Francisco, and so they make the trip down to Redwood City to, you know, check out the place to see what's going on. And they sometimes they come up and tell me, you know, how nice it is to listen to the talks that we produce. Victor over there is big time responsible for doing all these talks and getting them out in the world. And they're expressing their thanks. And one of the things they say is how, you know, many of them live in places where there are no places like this. And the Audio Dharma, the talks, is one of the primary connections to practice and support. And, you know, they're certainly grateful for us being here, but it makes me appreciate even more what we have here than there's people, you know, so far away. So, and it's quite inspiring to me. It's meaningful for me that these people like you will come this way, because, you know, when people benefit from something and choose to come and let us know, or just to come and share it with us, like they're coming sitting with us, I think we all benefit. It's a nice thing. So thank you for coming. And I don't know, any other Audio Dharma tourists here today? Or if anybody wants to suggest a better term.
Pilgrims.
What? Pilgrims. Audio Dharma pilgrims.
So. Depends on how far you came.
Some people came from next door. Right? Sophia, pilgrim from next door. So, okay, so that's enough. So, we have about 5 minutes, and any questions about this, or any complaints about it, and anything you want to say?
So I'm really grateful for your talk tonight. It was exactly what I needed to hear. I was late today. I usually come for the yoga class at 6:30 and went to start my car and it didn't start. So I went and I called, you know, the repair people and the technician, and instead of being grateful that my car was still under warranty and someone would actually come and fix it for me, instead of being grateful that I had a car, that it, you know, stopped working when I was in my driveway and in a safe place and my kids were taken care of, I just got really upset and frustrated, and the technician came and he didn't know where the battery was. And instead of being grateful that someone came out to my house and, you know, at night and the holiday season, I was kind of pissed off that the technician didn't even know where the battery was. And so then it got, you know, it got really late by the time we kind of dealt with it all, and they're going to tow it tomorrow morning to the dealer. And my husband said, well, are you still going to go to your meditation? I was like, well, you know, it's really late, and I miss the yoga, and I'm with the meditation. It's going to be my own meditation. I don't want to walk in. And he's like, you should go. I was like, yeah, you're probably right. And it was exactly what I needed to hear, so thank you very much.
Great.
A practice that I started doing on a retreat maybe a year ago that I want to share, and I keep up in my life. And before I eat, I'll take a moment to reflect on the wind and the soil and the water, and the sun that supported those plants, and then the hands that took care of the plants, and the bees that pollinated the plants, and I'll sort of go like this, and you know, for more or less time, and the people that delivered the food, prepared the food, the families that love them, the things that help them, support them. And I've gotten a lot from this practice. It's helped me realize that the farmers all had, they had computers, and I work in software, and oh, so the thing that I was doing actually, feel sometimes I hate my job, this is so worthless. Oh, somebody's actually benefiting from this. And it really helped me connect with appreciative joy of, like, they have these children that they love and these things that, that bring them joy. And so I think that was the first time I really connected with that Brahma Vihara and, like, organically and got it. So I love this practice. It makes me slow down before I eat. I notice if I'm gonna about to inhale my food, I'm like, oh, I didn't do my gratitude, and it, like, makes me sort of pull back from the sort of, you know, insane wanting that happens before eating. Anyway, so it's a lovely thing, and if it works for you.
Beautiful. So, you know, the kind of repeating what I said earlier, but the, you know, the idea of meditating and being present and being calm and no longer caught up so much in your mind, not only is nice in and of itself, but it also gives you the option to choose what you think about. And so you can actually do some creative thinking. Reflecting on particular themes that are important for you. And so for Tal, it was reflecting on, you know, this web of gratitude and appreciation that spreads out. And that's a beautiful thing to do.
I guess I may talk about why I'm here as a tourist or pilgrim. I'm really here to thank Gil and Sangha members and about the great teachings and offerings. And I started to listen to the Audio Dharma actually starting from this fall, and it greatly deepened and upgraded my practice. And I had to visit and say thank you,
thank you
for your great teaching and offering. And my wife will actually hear this when the recording is up online, so I'm making, you know, some evidence that I'm really not doing anything else. And I really want to actually talk to you in person right after, but my flight is going to depart in less than 2 hours, so I may have to jump on right away.
Wow, okay. Where are you from?
I'm from Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Great, wonderful.
Thank you.
So thank you all very much, and I hope that you spread some gratitude, spread the gratitude around, and share it with other people. It's good. It's one of those things that the more you share, you know, the more you'll have. So, and I'll see you with a new year.